The Titans of Trial podcast is sponsored by the Florida Justice Association Research and Education Foundation, promoting the study and understanding of Florida's civil justice system and how its preservation benefits consumers, victims, and all Floridians. Learn more at floridajusticeassociation.org.
From the Florida Justice Association, these are the Titans of Trial.
The reason I took it is because I believed that that Greyhound bus was speeding. It just was my experience that when you see Greyhound buses on the highway, I've never been able to pass one. So that was my gut instinct.
Richard Slauson talks about the most difficult case in his career and the role the Florida Justice Association has played in his practice.
I think without the impact of the CLE programs of the FJA, I don't know that I would have achieved as much success. We have to continue to give back, not just to the community, but to the FJA, to its programs, so that we can stand against the continuous efforts to take away people's rights, their access to the court, the attack on the contingency fee, and the attack on the independence of the judiciary.
And on the importance of balancing your legal career with your family life.
He told me on one of our trips that every time he would go out onto the field, whether it was football, baseball, or lacrosse, he would look up in the stand and see that I was there. And I said, was that important to you? And he said, yes, Dad, it was.
Welcome to Titans of Trial, featuring the personal stories of the men and women who've made a difference to the practice of trial law in Florida. I'm Paul Jess, Executive Director of the Florida Justice Association. Richard Slauson's guiding principle in life has been to stay determined and never give up. He credits it to his success in personal injury cases and to becoming one of Florida's preeminent insurance bad faith lawyers. He's now focusing that tenacity on fighting human trafficking, having transitioned to an of counsel role. The Florida Justice Association has been another common thread in his life. He's a past president of the FJA and has been honored with the Perry Nichols Award, its most prestigious, together with the Al J. Cohn and B.J. Masterson Awards. He's also in the FJA's Eagle Hall of Fame for his lifetime of leadership and financial contributions to protect consumer rights. Richard Slauson sat down with Florida Justice Association radio host Harvey Bennett in May 2019 to share his powerful message of consumer advocacy, pointers on running a successful law firm, and his one regret about not having started his own practice sooner. Richard, you made a career in insurance law and earned a reputation as one of Florida's premier bad faith trial lawyers in the insurance area. Insurance is just especially crucial in this state of Florida, isn't it?
Well, it certainly is. We're the third largest populated state in the nation. Insurance affects most parts of our lives, so it's important that not only you have insurance, but that you hold insurance companies accountable when they take a person's premium and betray that trust.
Your career has been spent defending folks who haven't gotten a fair shake from the insurance companies.
Yes, I have represented folks who, in my opinion and in fact, have been betrayed by the insurance companies that they depended upon to protect them.
Is there one particular case from your past, and I know you did wrongful death and injury as well as part of your career, is there one case in particular that stands out for you?
There is a case that stands out forever in my memory. It was probably the most difficult case I had, and it was called Joseph and Jackson versus Greyhound, and it involved the death of four little children whose aunt lost control of a front steering vehicle on a 4th of July weekend, and the vehicle went across the grassy area of the turnpike, up onto the traffic flow of oncoming traffic in front of a Greyhound bus. Mm-hmm. And there was an impact and the children were killed. And I was hired to represent the families, the mothers and dads of those children. And the offer by Greyhound was an insulting $5,000 per child. And the little black children were obviously very young. The mothers were really grieving. And other lawyers had looked at the case and didn't want to take it. Some of my good trial lawyer friends said it can't be won. But the reason I took it is because I believed that that Greyhound bus was speeding. It just was my experience that when you see Greyhound buses on the highway, I've never been able to pass one. So that was my gut instinct. And so I hired two experts who were previously testified in the collapse of the Sunshine Bridge by Tampa, and I hired both of them. One was for the plaintiff, one was for the defense. I hired them both, and we had skid marks. And based upon the skid marks and the gouge marks, it was determined that the bus was speeding. And so I felt that we could prove to the jury that had that bus been going 55 miles an hour, the speed limit, it could have stopped 50 feet short of impact, and those children would not have been killed.
Wow.
Unfortunately, we had three witnesses against us. The bus driver said he was going 55. A retired policeman driving a tow truck on his way to see his girlfriend for the 4th of July weekend said the bus wasn't speeding. And another individual said that his cruise control was set at 55 and he was going even with the bus.
No. Why in the world did you think you would have a chance to win that case then?
Because I felt, and with my experts, we believed, and we could prove it was indeed speeding, and we did. Those gouge marks, those skid marks, and you use the scientific approach, and we set the speed at around almost 70. And if it had been going 55, it would have stopped 50 feet short. And the other thing, because my brother-in-law asked me, my goddaughter was born on that Saturday, that's why I think it was 1985, mm-hmm. and he asked me, how are you going to win that case? And I said, common sense. So that was the challenge, how to get away around those three witnesses. But I had the scientific evidence, I had good experts, and the defense expert indicated that the bus was going 54.5 miles an hour, and the three witnesses said that it was going exactly 55 miles an hour.
And of course, these are in the days before the black boxes that
yes.
are on commercial vehicles
Correct.
That would have definitively been able to tell.
Correct.
Got it.
But there is a, Greyhound buses have a different braking system, so I had the experts describe all that to the jury, and we pretty much tore up the testimony of the defense expert. And in closing, I had to overcome these witnesses. So the common sense argument, I thought, in rebuttal was this, that assume, you know, we're on late afternoon, July 3rd, on a holiday weekend, and we're in a hurry to get home. Each of these people happened to be in a hurry to get to their meeting their family to celebrate the 4th of July or their girlfriends. And they're involved as witnesses to a crash where four little children are killed. And the police officer comes up to you and says, now, how fast were you going? And human nature is we're all going to say 55.
Sure.
And the jury returned the verdict for exactly what we asked for.
How did that client have an impact on you?
There was a moment during that trial when, throughout the whole handling of the case, these mothers particularly were grieving. They would go, they left the bedrooms of their children exactly the way they were, with all the pictures, with all the pretty dresses and flowers and toys. They would visit the gravesite every day and pray. And during the trial, one of the ladies just broke down and was wailing in grief over the loss of her two children. And the judge cleared the courtroom and said, Mr. Slauson, you have 3 minutes to get your client under control, or we will declare a mistrial.
Wow.
So that was a tough moment to take her outside and to plead with her to, I understand her grief, I understand her emotions, but we need to, at this point, do the testimony without, you know, any more crying. And she was able to, she is a courageous lady, and she was able to do it. And we went on to win. I think the night before the verdict, they did ask for a calculator, which was a pretty good sign on liability. Mm-hmm. And then the next day, they returned the verdict. And I'm pretty proud of that, because that was a tough case, but it was a deserving family.
And some your fellow colleagues felt was not a winning case.
They did, and I may not have taken that case if it hadn't been a Greyhound bus, because it just my instincts were that Greyhound buses generally are speeding, and once I got the expert testimony, then I knew we could prove it. But there had been a really famous trial lawyer in Florida tried a similar case with a linen truck and lost that case under similar facts. Mm-hmm. So I think the fact that it was a Greyhound bus encouraged me to undertake the battle on behalf of those families.
Yeah. Richard, let's go back. You grew up in Minnesota, attended Notre Dame undergrad as well as law school, came to Florida. You were in the Army Reserves as a captain. What made you want to be a lawyer in the first place?
In high school, I recognized that it seemed to be the rule of law affected almost every element of life and society. And so it was an opportunity, I felt, to make a difference in other people's lives, but also give me some control over my future and make a good living. And it looked like a really rewarding profession from the standpoint of both helping people and controlling your own future. I wanted to go to Notre Dame, and I needed financial aid to go there, and so I drove from Rochester, Minnesota, to South Bend, Indiana, and went to the admissions office and asked for financial aid. And the individual said, "Well, we never give financial aid to a transferring student." I was transferring from Minnesota to Notre Dame for my last 2 years of undergraduate, and in looking at, you know, your family. Economically, it's probably not good for you to come here. You're really too poor to come.
Wow.
And that was a disappointment and a setback. So I left and got in the car, and the tears of disappointment dried. And by the time I got back to Rochester, I had made a determined plan that not only was I going to Notre Dame, but I was going to win a scholarship. So I got a construction job, and I saved about $3,000 that summer, and I went to Notre Dame, and then I earned a scholarship, and then I earned a scholarship at the law school. So having graduated at high levels, so that's something that I shared with my kids, because you have those disappointments, but you never give up, and you stay determined. And if you do that in life, you will succeed.
What were the most important influences in your life growing up?
I would say a very hard-working mom who raised six kids and a loving family. Those were probably the most important influences. And I think learning a good work ethic and realizing that with hard work you can achieve.
How did you go about honing your trial skills as a young lawyer?
Well, I owe that really to the FJA and the CLE programs. I consider a lot of, although I didn't have an individual mentor and I'm sort of self-taught and thrown into the courtroom right away, I kind of had to learn on my own, but I would attend the CLE seminars and the great trial lawyers before me and during my career were remarkable in their willingness to share their knowledge, their techniques, and I adopted many of those, and I owe a lot to the CLE programs of the, used to be called the Trial Lawyer Association, but right. Florida Trial Lawyers, but now the FJA.
And you actually knew Al J. Cohn, you knew B.J. Masterson.
Yes.
Two of the giants.
Yes.
In trial law in Florida.
Yes. And others who would give of their time to educate younger lawyers and their peers. A very a rewarding and a very sharing experience, but I think without the impact of the CLE programs of the FJA, I don't know that I would have achieved as much success.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about the FJA. You have had a heavy involvement from the start, really, with them. You're past president. You've won the trifecta, as I call it, of all the FJA's top honors, the Perry Nichols Award, which is the FJA's most prestigious, the Al J. Cohn Lifetime Achievement Award, mentioning Al J. Cohn, which recognizes a career of courage, leadership, devotion, and setting an example, the B.J. Masterson Award for high ethical standards. You've been inducted into the Eagle Hall of Fame, Eagle Hall of Fame Award, Silver Eagle Award, etc. And as a past president, let's start there, because that is such a critical position, and the board members and officers. Were you intensely involved in a particular issue or project when you were FJA president?
Well, we had a number of them when I was FJA president. I think there were about 40 immunity or tort reform bills that were negative toward the rights of the citizens and access to the courts and trial by jury and the independence of the judiciary. And then we defeated all of those. And then on the positive side, we passed the Tolling for Tony bill, which tolled the statute of limitations for children, for kids, elongated it. And then we had the fight over the repeal of the tobacco legislation. And we had to
Now this was before the big tobacco suit that we all know of.
It was the enacting legislation passed that permitted the state of Florida to sue the tobacco industry for reimbursements for the payments that the state had made for people who suffered from the consequences of tobacco.
Got it. So it was the law that made the later lawsuit possible.
It was. And then in my year, there was a tremendous effort by the tobacco industry to repeal that law. And so, you know, we met with the governor and others, and the bottom line is that they did not get the repeal, and then the large lawsuit ensued. Mm. What happened when I was on the executive committee, the Supreme Court destroyed the rights to get the excess judgment in a UM case. It was called McLeod.
Uninsured
motorist. Mm-hmm. And it was, the justice was McDonald. And so Paul Jess and I looked at the situation, and we didn't have much chance of overturning that Supreme Court decision. So we figured out a winning strategy that gave us some hope and opportunity. And so we amended a different part of the statute, the uninsured motorist statute, which was going to sunset. So it was a must-pass legislation, and we put in, I helped write the statute. So it reversed the McLeod decision and put in the law that the intent of the legislature has always been to, in a first-party situation, to allow you to recover all your damages against the insurance company in an underinsured or uninsured motorist bad faith case. That's probably the most significant legislation that I was involved in. And then a number of cases over the years that helped advance the bad faith law.
How has your involvement with the Florida Justice Association impacted your career?
Well, I think it's impacted my career in a number of ways. I think it helped me stay current in the law. It helped me hone trial lawyer skills and develop techniques that my predecessors and peers were utilizing in the courtroom. I think it gave me leadership experience. It gave me a sense of accomplishment. It was a reward for being persistent and involved. And over the years, I think in lobbying in Tallahassee broadened my perspective of how we have to continue to give back, not just to the community, but to the FJA, to its programs, so that we can stand against the continuous efforts to take away people's rights, their access to the court, the attack on the contingency fee, and the attack on the independence of the judiciary.
What's been the most rewarding part for you about being a plaintiff's attorney?
The most rewarding part is making a difference in people's lives and and knowing that you truly have made a difference in their lives. There's one client in particular that also has made an indelible mark on me as a person and me as a lawyer. Many years ago, maybe over 30, I represented a lady, I think she was from Colombia, and it wasn't my biggest settlement, it wasn't a huge settlement, but it was a settlement that was significant enough in her life. She was helping her elderly mother, and she told me what an amazing difference it made in her life. And so for 30 years, she has sent to me every Christmas and every Easter a prayer card and a birthday card. And wow. She has prayed for 30 years for me and for my children, and I believe in the power of prayer. So I thank her. She's wow. A remarkable lady.
Wow.
It made a difference in her life, but she felt it important to express her appreciation.
Right. Well, and the work that you do and other trial lawyers lasts a lifetime. Good or bad, the outcome, but it lasts a client's lifetime. It obviously impacts your life, your career.
You're absolutely correct. It's life-changing for people.
Now, a few years back, you decided to hang up regular trial lawyer duty. You've become of counsel with a former partner of yours from your original law firm, Mike Berman. Tell us about that transition and why, and what you're doing now.
Well, over the years, involvement with the FJA and being there at critical times and making some differences in both the law. My philosophy of practicing law was to leave the practice, the area of my practice, better than when I found it. So I came at a point in my career that I knew, truly, that the law in my area of practice was indeed better. Based upon our efforts through the FJA and some of my individual cases, or my firm's cases. And I decided that the time was right to stop trading time for dollars and to be selective in the cases I wanted to be involved in and to devote the rest of my time to the fight against human trafficking of children.
How did you get involved in children advocacy?
Well, early in our career, my career and my partner Mike Berman, we believed in children's safety, and so we started to run some infomercials on children's safety. There was one summer, I recall, that 13 children died of drowning in Palmage County, and then there were smoke alarm issues. So we would make some public service ads and run those on replacing smoke alarms, on safety devices for preventing death by drowning by kids. And then it evolved into my working with Place of Hope, which is the local organization that takes the abandoned, neglected kids. They're unfortunately called the throwaway kids. And it keeps their families, the siblings, together and helps them grow and develop and off to school and jobs in a faith-based family setting. And from there, I was asked to join the board of Florida Children's First, which is the statewide advocacy group for children in the legislative arena.
Okay.
And in that regard, for the last 3 years, we've tried to pass legislation to prevent the trafficking of kids in this state. And we were unsuccessful for 2 years, but this year I'm happy to say that at least we've accomplished an educational piece where every hotel, motel, lodging association has to educate all their employees on how to recognize and report human trafficking, and they have to post the National Polaris Hotline number for human trafficking. So that's how I got involved, and that's why I'm still involved, because Florida's number 3 in the nation in trafficking, in human trafficking.
Wow.
Both for labor and for sex. So that is my mission at this point.
Mm-hmm. What are you most proud of?
I'm most proud of my kids and the wonderful adults that they have become. My daughter Alexandra and my son Scott, remarkable young adults, and And I'm also proud of the professional accomplishments in the career that God has blessed me with.
Reflecting back on your law career, are there some secrets to your day-to-day success that you can share? This is a very tough profession. Not only are you dealing with complex issues, and you also have a personal life that's very important to you. You mentioned the children. How do you balance all of that?
One of the important ways that I decided to try to have that balance was to, at the beginning of every school year, I would have my legal assistant schedule all of my daughter's dance programs, recitals, and her lacrosse games, and my son's football and lacrosse games, and school plays, or whatever the programs were. They would be scheduled on my calendar for the whole school year, and everything, depositions included, would be secondary to that, and we would work, you know, our legal practice around that schedule. Other than a trial, I was able to keep that schedule.
Wow.
One time as president, I had to stay longer in Tallahassee than planned, and I had promised my son to be at a space bowl game, and he was a little guy at that time, and so I bought some clothes to stay the extra 2 days in Tallahassee, and we got accomplished what they needed to, but I couldn't get a flight back, so I chartered a flight to get back and made it to my son's baseball game.
Wow, you made it one way or the other.
I made it one way or the other. Yep. And recently, and now he's 25, but he told me on one of our trips that every time he would go out onto the field, whether it was football, baseball, or lacrosse, he would look up in the stand and see that I was there. And I said, was that important to you? And he said, yes, Dad, it was. So that's the family part. I think that has to come first, because that's part of the essence of you as an individual. Now, you have to run a law firm as a business. So I have some points for young lawyers. You need to learn early on which cases not to take, how to say no. You need to stay current in the law with the CLE programs, particularly the FJA. I think they're the best. You need to always be prepared on your cases. But also, you need to run a law firm that is successful, because without the cash flow, without being a success, you can't help people. So I always had a weekly cash report. I would have a monthly profit and loss statement, quarterly profit and loss statement. And then I would have a program where on a quarterly basis we would bonus the lawyers and the assistants, the secretaries, and the staff quarterly. As we succeeded, we wanted to share in that success with them. You know, you need to have good management skills. You need to know how to hire and fire. You know, you hire slowly and you fire quickly, but you want to make sure everyone in that team is the right person in the right place for that team to be a cohesive, successful team. And the practice of law is teamwork. It's teamwork within the firm, and it's teamwork with other lawyers throughout the state. The FJA lawyers are very charitable and willing to share. And you can call any FJA person, and they'll help you with an expert or give you an idea on a particular problem you may be facing in a particular case. The other thing is, I like to use focus groups on important cases. I think you have to have lawyers look at cases differently sometimes than the lay folks do. So you need to have a focus group on bigger cases in order to give you the right perspective.
And that's an area of law that's really become more sophisticated over the years, hasn't it?
It truly has, both in focusing your case and in jury selection. And then finally, I would say that if you're going to take the case to the jury, you better be sure you really believe in your client and in your case, and then you passionately represent that client. But if you don't have that belief, you may not be able to get a successful result.
Now, despite a plaintiff's lawyer's best efforts, there are cases that one will lose. You had a great record, but how do you handle disappointment?
Well, if they're little losses, it's a little easier to handle. But I, you know, early on, I've somehow had the philosophy that if you handle little, there are going to be disappointments in life. So if you handle the little ones, it's easier to handle the big ones. But you have to have a long-term view. We're all going to have disappointments, but they don't always last, and you always have to look for an opportunity in that disappointment, and you also have to know that, the sun will come out tomorrow. There will be an upside, just like the 100-year history of the stock market. After every crash or downturn, there has always been an upside. So I think if you take the long-term view, you don't not let it, it may knock you down, knock you back, but you get up and keep fighting.
Do you have regrets?
Probably everybody has regrets, but one as far as the practice of law, I wish I had started my own firm earlier than I did. I think it would have been better for my career quicker. But I guess in life, there's a saying that you regret more about those things you didn't do than the things you did do. So in that respect, as far as a lawyer, yeah, I wish I would have started my practice earlier, my solo practice, started my own firm. But it would have been more helpful had I had a mentor. I started out with a very small firm, but they, not necessarily the great giants, trial lawyers. So I got in there and had to try cases. I think it would have been more helpful had I got into the FJA earlier and had I had a mentor in a larger, firm with a more established, well-known trial lawyers.
What's your view on the future of the legal profession? Any concerns?
I have some concerns. I hope that the lawyers now and the new lawyers will have the same tenacity to keep fighting for access to the courts, the contingency fee, the right to trial by jury, and the independence of the judiciary. I think there is a real formidable attack on those rights right now. There has been, but I think now more than ever, the battle to preserve the rights in the bad faith arena has been about a 40-year battle. Every year, the insurance industry wants to change the jury instructions or wants to move cases to federal court to get a better ruling to change the law in the state of Florida with respect to bad faith. Mm-hmm. But we've had it since 1938. The rights established in the legal system to protect insureds against bad faith conduct by insurance companies. But it hasn't been easy to maintain those rights, and we've fought for 40 years successfully maintaining those rights. So when you have CLE programs, you can keep the lawyers educated and get them ready for the battle to continue that battle after older lawyers move on. It's the younger lawyers' time to pick up that torch. These are valuable rights that we have, not just in bad faith, but the right to trial by jury, the right to have an independent judiciary, that are constantly under attack and have been under attack for 40 years at least. And it is the FJA and those people who contribute to it that make a difference in preserving these fundamental rights.
Richard, how would you like to be remembered?
I'd like to be remembered as a great dad, as a successful trial lawyer who fought hard for his clients within the bounds of professionalism, as a person who cared about children's safety and well-being and advocated against the human traffickers of children.
Richard Slauson, you are a titan of trial. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Paul Jess. We hope you enjoyed listening to this Titans of Trial episode. If you're not already a member, we'd like to invite you to join the Florida Justice Association. Please visit us on the web at floridajusticeassociation.org or drop us a line at radio@floridajusticeassociation.org.
Thank you for listening to this Titans of Trial podcast, sponsored by the Florida Justice Association Research and Education Foundation, promoting the study and understanding of Florida's civil justice system and how its preservation benefits consumers, victims, and all Floridians. Learn more at floridajusticeassociation.org.